You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 19th of October 2012 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Midori House on Monocle 24, live from Studio One in London with me, Hugo MacDonald. Coming up in the next 60 minutes, after the deadly explosion of a car bomb in the Ashrafieh neighbourhood of Beirut, we'll be finding out the latest from our man on the ground there. We'll also be looking into the extraordinary annual logistics required in performing the Hajj, complete with camel winching. Back in Midori House, we'll talk to Santiago Rodriguez Tarditi about the edits section in the latest issue of Monocle.
Each chef in Peru has their own secret recipe, and as you can see in recipe number 2, we share what we think is a good leche de tigre recipe.
And our foreign editor Steve Bloomfield will be filling us in on his highlights of 1 year on Monocle 24.
Normally we drink these schnapps 1 in the morning before eating,
really?
So you never be sick.
That's
really?
A nice way to start the day.
and if you get sick, you don't know it because you are drunk.
All that, plus we'll be playing some music too. That's all to come in the next hour here on Midori House. But first, let's get the latest news headlines with David Spencer.
Thank you. A huge car bomb exploded in a street in central Beirut, killing at least 8 people. Dozens were also injured in the blast, which happened during the rush hour. The bomb exploded in the street where the office of the anti-Damascus Christian Falange Party is located, Lebanese telecom minister Nicolas Sanawai.
People are optimistic that we're doing the right thing. People believe that we've had, in Greece, we made huge sacrifices. And therefore, people believe that through hard work, those sacrifices will be met with measures that will help us get out of the crisis fast, stabilize the economy.
That was the Greek Prime Minister Antonis Samaras speaking as European leaders agreed to allow the European Central Bank to supervise banks from next year. The European Commission proposed making the ECB responsible for supervision as a step towards a banking union that would help resolve problem banks and protect savers' deposits. Questions remain, though, about how the process will work. Separately, the EU leaders issued a statement welcoming Greece's moves towards an agreement with its lenders and saying good progress had been made in putting the bailout back on track. NATO's chief Anders Fogh Rasmussen has urged the Afghan government to strive for free, fair and transparent elections in next year's presidential poll. Speaking at the end of a 2-day visit to Afghanistan with senior diplomats from 35 countries that supply troops to the NATO-led force there, he said the elections mark a critical juncture in the country's quest for peace. His words came a day after President Hamid Karzai suggested foreign members be removed from the election watchdog in a step that could be seen as bolstering his grip on power. A curfew has been imposed on all US troops in Japan following the suspected rape of a woman in Okinawa by 2 US servicemen. The 2 suspects were arrested on Tuesday. The 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew covers visiting servicemen as well as those based there. There's been considerable anger over the incident, with Okinawa's regional governments calling for a review of the Japan-US Status of Forces Treaty. John Roos is America's ambassador to Japan and says he can understand people's anger.
I have a 25-year-old daughter myself, so this is very personal to me. And I can tell you that all of our civilian and military leaders share my feelings. And they share my unequivocal commitment to positive action going forward.
Miners have ended a strike at South African bullion producer Gold Fields. However, the month-long strike at Anglo-American Platinum, the world's top producer of the precious metal, shows no sign of ending. President Jacob Zuma's pledge to speed up investment to ease anger about working conditions that have led to the worst labour unrest since apartheid. A businessman whose request for cash to influence European law led to the resignation of the EU's health commissioner wanted a €60 million bribe, tobacco firm Swedish Match has said. John Daly resigned on Tuesday after a European Union anti-fraud office found a Maltese businessman that tried to use his links to the health commissioner, also from Malta, to influence future EU tobacco legislation. That's the latest on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, David. It's 18:05 here in London. You're listening to Midori House on Monocle 24.
Desde Londres, esto es Monocle 24.
From London, this is Monocle 24.
Ot London, tu vas a Monocle 24.
De Londres, vous écoutez Monocle 24.
From London, this is Monocle 24.
London から.
From London,
Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
Desde Londres, esto es Monocle 24.
Vanuit London, dit is Monocle 24.
From London,
this is Monocle 24.
It's 20:06 in Beirut. You're listening to Midori House live from Studio One in London. And earlier today, a car bomb exploded in central Beirut, killing at least 8 people and injuring 78 in the predominantly Christian district of Ashrafieh. While it's still unclear who the attackers might be and who they were targeting, there are reports that top intelligence official Wissam Al-Hassan is one of the victims. Well, joining us on the line now from Beirut is journalist Yorn de Kock. Yorn, maybe you could start just by saying exactly what we do know and what the facts are.
Well, it's actually quite difficult to find out what the facts are, because when I arrived at the scene, it was complete chaos, and nobody exactly knew why specifically that area was targeted. It's a Christian neighborhood, Ashrafieh. There were no obvious targets in sight. News agencies reported that it would be political opposition, one party or the other, headquarters that would have been targeted. Actually, they were nowhere near. And only a couple of hours later, we learned that the man who was actually targeted was Wissam Al-Hassan, who is involved in investigations regarding Syrian bomb plots in Lebanon.
And this reports have been confirmed then that he was the target, but nobody has actually come forward to admit that they were behind the bombing, is that right?
Well, the thing is, in Lebanon is so complicated that you never know who is exactly behind some conspiracy. But he was obviously the target, because there's literally nothing else. I was in those streets, and it's not even a wealthy neighborhood. There was glass all over the place. It was obviously a powerful car bomb, so there must have been a target, and so that guy was the target, and he was involved in these investigations regarding the Syrian regime trying to mess up Lebanon. And the problem in Lebanon is that everybody now is nervous, because until, let's say, 2005, these car bombings happened, every week. Former prime ministers, intellectuals, journalists were targeted. Lebanon has been quite stable for the past years. Love life here. And they're scared that they're going back into the dark ages.
Of course. I mean, we saw clashes in Tripoli over the summer. And like you say, the sort of mood in Beirut has obviously been quite nervous with all the violence across the border in Syria. Is this the start, do you think, of something that's going to escalate?
Well, the problem with Lebanon is it's a very small country. It only has two neighbours, Syria and Israel, and they're both trigger happy. So Lebanon has always, especially since the Syrian revolution started, it has always been nervous that what happens in Syria would spill over into Lebanon. And, well, a lot of people think that the Syrian regime actually has a lot to gain by bringing chaos into Lebanon, because it's a regional problem, not the Syrian regime versus the problem. So, and today was actually the first day when, when the problems hit the streets in a neighborhood like Ashrafiya, where a lot of expats are living, which is a very residential, nice neighborhood. There's a lot of nice bars and restaurants. And, and then they were targeting a guy who was obviously anti-Syrian regime. So everybody at the moment is thinking like, Syria has come to Lebanon.
Yon de Kock in Beirut, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be following that story in tonight's Daily as well. That's at 2200 hours later this evening, hopefully with a better line. You're listening to Midori House here on Monocle 24.
Monocle 24 is growing. We're proud to introduce The Stack, a new programme on air every Saturday. This lively one-hour show is a celebration of the print media, exploring the best in periodicals, niche journals and newspapers, and talking to people from around the world who are pushing the sector forward and shaping the media landscape. Running on Saturdays at 10 a.m. UK time and repeated on Sundays, the show is an intimate conversation around a coffee table stacked with interesting magazines and newspapers from around the globe, hosted by Monocle's editor-in-chief, Tyler Brûlé. That's The Stack, every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. UK time, repeated on Sundays and available online. Brought to you in association with J.Crew.
hours, 12 months, 20 million downloads, one radio station. We're celebrating our first anniversary here at Monocle 24. So if you're interested in what Richard Branson taught us about business, or maybe you missed the time when we talked politics with Carl Bildt.
To call it an international conference, that's difficult in itself. The really difficult thing is then to start to implement the conclusions.
If you'd like to enjoy Zaha Hadid one more time, or perhaps you want to remind yourself of what happened when Kylie popped in.
It's been interesting to have a year of celebrating and digesting and looking back at all that I've done in the last 25 years.
Then don't forget, every minute of Monocle 24 is available at monocle.com, via iTunes or on our app. We look forward to bringing you many more years of great audio. Monocle 24, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
Welcome back to Midori House. The time in London here is 18:13. Now, all week on Midori House, the editors of Monocle have been sitting down with us in the studio, telling us about the making of the most recent issue on newsstands around the world now. A little earlier, Santiago Rodriguez Tarditi told me about the edits section. Santiago, thank you for coming in to talk us through the edits section of the new edition of Monocle, issue 58, out on newsstands around the world now. I've flicked straight to the Shah Wellness Clinic in Alicante. You're fresh off a plane from Australia. I'm sure you could do with a trip to there now, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah, I would love to spend a couple of nights at this clinic, getting a bit of detox and just getting helping me get again on track.
It calls itself a clinic, but it looks more like a hotel to me.
It's a mix of both. People go there to enroll themselves in treatments and therapies and detoxing diets. But it's also a nice place for a weekend break to get some sun, some beautiful Spanish sun. And enjoy the great food that they serve there.
Beautiful swimming pools, beautiful sauna, amazing setting by the looks of things. I'm intrigued by this picture in the bottom right-hand corner of page 180, where somebody's lifting up a glass cloche and it looks like there's been a small explosion on a plate underneath it. What's going on there?
So that is part of the macrobiotic menu that chef Pablo Montoro, who was a former cook at the El Bulli restaurant, has devised for this clinic.
It's not cigarette smoke under there, is it?
It is not. It is not. But they did smoke some vegetables with a very cool machine that looks almost like a hookah. You know those Turkish pipes. And what they did is that they put a little bit of wood chips that were infused with mint. And then they created this smoke, and they left it there to season the vegetables for like 30 seconds or so.
How very delicious. I also see something that looks at alcohol being poured into a dish. Is this a dry clinic, or are you allowed to indulge in the odd glass of wine?
There are two options, both organic, wine and beer. But it's not easy to get your hands on some of these drinks.
Part of the wellness program.
No, you kind of have to wink your eye at the waiters in order to get some booze. But but no, actually, this is Solan de Cabras. It's one of Spain's most popular organic waters. Comes from a spring in the Valencian region, so it's very, very pure water.
Pure water, not vodka.
No.
You were very busy last month as well, because for my section, the design section, if we can leap forward a little bit, you went and visited Nord Architects' new cancer hospice in Copenhagen. And this is one of my favourite stories in the issue. It's a fantastic building on page 157. Is it as good as it looks when you go there? Does it still have that hospital feel, or does it really feel as domestic as all the furniture and decoration makes it look?
It's much better. It's much better. It's a great place to be. You don't get that uncomfortable feeling of walking into a clinic where everything is kind of anodyne and smells of
formaldehyde.
Formaldehyde, exactly. And I think what's even more special is the people that work there, because they help a lot with their charming attitude and they're very welcoming. This building doesn't have a lobby or a reception in the classical way that hospitals do. And instead, the first thing you see is a dining table and a kitchen counter. And the first thing that the receptionist, so to say, or the volunteers that work there at the front door do is that they offer you coffee or tea instead of making you fill a form or asking you for your details. Regardless of whether you're a patient or just a visitor or maybe a family member of one of the people that are receiving treatment there, they will offer you a coffee and just talk about yourself and just meet your needs before actually getting more into detail of your treatment
and
the day's work.
The computer says no.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm flicking back over to the edit section. I can't let you go without taking us through the food pages. You visited Lima.
One of our writers did, in fact. I have been to Lima before, and when she pitched the story, I was very happy because Cantarrana is one of the best ceviche restaurants in Barranco, the city's colonial neighborhood. Very popular these days, especially around London. Ceviche is made with raw fish. And the key ingredient is leche de tigre, or tiger's milk, which is, I know it sounds horrible.
Sounds very unsavory.
But it's basically freshly squeezed lime juice with a little bit of ají,
okay,
with chili.
You don't need to milk a tiger then to make
ceviche. No, not really. But but it's very difficult to get this right. There are each chef in Peru has their own secret recipe. And although we tried to get the owner of Cantarrana to share it with us, it was kind of difficult. I think he avoided giving us all the ingredients. But as you can see in recipe number 2 on page 191, we share what we think is a good leche de tigre recipe.
Fantastic. Well, ceviche lovers around the world can now make their own, maybe if not to the standards of Cantarana's own ceviche, at least a very good equivalent. Santiago, thank you. It's 18:19 here in London. You're listening to Midori House live from Studio One. And time for a short musical interlude. This is Solange Knowles with Losing You. That was the wonderful Solange Knowles with Losing You. It's 18:24 here in London. You're listening to Midori House. Now, every Friday, one or two, perhaps, of our senior editorial team at Monocle come down to the studio to go over the news of the week. And I'm lucky enough today to be joined by Sophie Grove, Monocle's senior editor, and Steve Bloomfield, Monocle's foreign editor. Welcome, both of you.
Hello.
Hi.
Who's got a news story for me?
Sophie has. No, yeah. Right, we both have.
We were talking about this upstairs, and we thought we wanted to talk about the presidential debate because it was quite juicy.
It was quite juicy.
And it's a real game changer because last time, obviously, Obama was shuffling his papers and looking, quite frankly, awkward for such an amazing evangelical speaker. And then this time he sort of came back. Looking quite good.
To the point, though, where it made me wonder if the whole thing had been orchestrated, that he had sort of conceded the first debate and played a
really?
Game, that there was such a huge...
No, he could have knocked him out in the first... If he had been, you know, awake in round one and not comatose, he could have ended this completely.
But I don't know, I'm sure I wasn't alone in thinking that it was so unbelievable how badly he did in the first debate that there wasn't something going on behind
the
scenes.
I love this conspiracy theory. It's brilliant because you're quite right. He is an amazing sort of unparalleled speaker and he did look sort of mousy and quite embarrassed.
Just maybe he had food poisoning or something.
Maybe he was having a really bad day. And I mean... It could have been strategical, it could have been more strategic, looking for a way to really have a comeback. But he did come back quite well. What
he
do
did.
You think, Steve?
Yes. No, it was a proper performance. There were actually two people on the stage this time, which I think made a bit of a difference. And he was very good. And he used the phrase not true several times, which he had failed to do in the first round when Mitt Romney had said things which were not true. And now he didn't say lie, because that'd be a little bit rude, but you know, not true at least is a step in the right direction. So it was far more combative, it was far more forceful. Romney was on the back foot. Obama was still in front anyway, despite his poor debate performance. He's performing very well in the swing state polls. Nationally, it might be more tied, but nationally, it doesn't really matter. And Romney is stacking up votes in the South, where he was going to win anyway, so it's kind of irrelevant. And we will see what happens on Monday with the third and final debate.
Debate three. Now, the whole internet have been set up around binders full of women. Is that enough for Romney to have ruled himself out, do you think?
I think it was brilliant the way he... I mean, the image of the binders full just really gave him this idea that he, instead of sort of really respecting women and knowing several people that spring to mind as candidates, he somehow had to just go out and sort of start scouring for these sort of token women, which he then put into a binder.
I would like to defend him. I have a binder full of women upstairs of potential correspondents.
Steve Bloomfield.
You may be ruling yourself. But it's very interesting the way women are such a significant sort of terrain, and they came in to this debate so much. The question of abortion is always a political football. But not just that, it's the Equal Rights Act for pay, which is one of the first acts that Obama signed as president. It's something that Romney doesn't really understand. All the women in his family are sort of mothers. They're all really educated, but they're not working women in the same sense. And there's completely different opinions. And I think women are really responding to everything that they say. They're very intuitive and they're 50% of the population.
Indeed. Now, I know that technically this was supposed to be a look back at the week's news, but looking ahead to next week, the third and final debate, is it going to provide as much excitement as the debate this week did, do you think?
Possibly. It's a difficult one because it's on foreign policy. So Mitt Romney will try to criticise. There are two things that he'll criticise Obama for. One will be the attack on the US consulate in Benghazi, during which four American diplomats died, including the ambassador, although Obama had a very good riposte to that in the last debate, but I'm sure Romney will come back again. The other thing he'll definitely talk about will be Iran and the possible threat to Israel. And I said two things, there are three things. The third is he'll talk about Syria. Romney has said he's prepared to arm some of the rebels. It'll be interesting to see if Obama picks up on that and says, well, okay, which rebels and how? Because Romney's been like, oh, well, we'll arm some of them, but only the nice ones. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But, you know, equally, Obama will probably, I'm fairly sure, mention Osama bin Laden.
Operation Geronimo.
And I'm not quite sure what Romney says to that other than, well done.
Yes, it's a bit of a trump card.
It is a little bit. Should we talk about the other big... the big international news story this week?
You can do it in 30 seconds.
Okay, it's good it's 30 seconds because it's really dull, but really important. And that's the European summit, which finished in the wee hours this morning. There was some sort of a deal, just like there's always some sort of a deal. We'll see how long it lasts. But I think what we're seeing in Greece with the protests there this week and the way the far right is rising there, the protests are now spreading to Portugal and what we're going to see in Spain as well over the weekend with the regional elections, that even if economic solutions are found piece by piece, the damage this has done to social fabric across Europe is going to be devastating.
Steve Bloomfield, Monocle's foreign editor, and Sophie Grove, Monocle's senior editor, thank you very much for joining me. You're listening to Midori House.
London, New York, Tokyo. This is Monocle 24.
London, New York, Tokyo. Това е Monocle 24.
Londres, Nova York, Tokyo.
London, New York, Tokyo. Dette er Monocle 24.
Londonist, New Yorkist, Tokyo. See on Monocle 24.
Shandai, Efrognewi, Tokyo.
London, New York, Tokyo, Monocle 24 です.
Londino, New York, Tokyo.
This is Monocle 24.
In the next half hour of Midori House, we'll be hearing about how camels get winched across the Red Sea. And we'll also be hearing more from Steve Bloomfield on his highlights of year one on Monocle 24. But before all that, here's David Spencer with the news headlines.
Thank you. A huge car bomb exploded in a street in central Beirut, killing at least 8 people. Dozens were also injured in the blast, which happened during the rush hour. The bomb exploded in the street where the office of the anti-Damascus Christian Falange Party is located. European leaders have agreed to allow the European Central Bank to supervise banks from next year. The European Commission has proposed making the ECB responsible for supervision as a step towards a banking union that would help resolve problem banks and protect savers' deposits. NATO's chief Anders Fogh Rasmussen has urged the Afghan government to strive for free, fair and transparent elections in next year's presidential poll. Speaking at the end of a 2-day visit to Afghanistan with senior diplomats from the 35 countries that supply troops to the NATO-led forces there, he said the elections mark a critical juncture in the country's quest for peace. A curfew has been imposed on all US troops in Japan following the suspected rape of a woman in Okinawa by 2 US servicemen. The two suspects were arrested on Tuesday. The 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew covers visiting servicemen as well as those based there. Miners have ended a strike at South African bullion producer Gold Fields. However, the month-long strike at Anglo American Platinum, the world's top producer of the precious metal, shows no sign of ending. That's the latest on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, David. It's 18:32 here in London. You're listening to Midori House. Now, 1.4 million people from 160 countries have arrived in the holy city of Mecca in Saudi Arabia for the annual Hajj. That's a lot of mouths to feed, beds to fill, and transportation logistics too. Joining me on the line now is East Africa correspondent for the Financial Times, Katrina Manson, who's witnessed firsthand hundreds of camels preparing to be shipped from Somalia to Mecca. Katrina, thank you for joining us. Maybe just set the scene a little bit. What is it like seeing these camels being herded onto boats?
Yes, it's a fantastic and quite surprising sight, certainly for me the first time I saw it. I got to Berbera Port, which is just on the Somaliland coast in the north, and there are cranes harnessing camels two at a time onto ships live. and it's just like a picture of Noah's Ark, and they're hoisted right up into the air and then along, and they're dangling all the time, these enormous safety carriers.
Amazing. In my mind, they were walking up ramps onto the ark rather than being winched by cranes. But presumably the camels aren't particularly happy. I imagine there must be a lot of squawking in the background.
You know, their eyelashes are long and their eyes as big as ever, but they are alive and they suffer pretty poor conditions on the route over. And various Somaliland businessmen are attempting to develop a coal packing system so that they'd actually be transported dead rather than alive in frigates. The meat better and also preserve the outfit of the cow, which is dead, the camel would be dead, but certainly wouldn't be experiencing the discomfort involved. But it seems it's a long way off. There's a little investment into Somaliland. It claims independence for itself, but it hasn't yet actually won recognition from anyone else. And so attracting investment into even such a simple thing as meat packing storage and refrigeration for the way across is really hard for them to get the sort of $10 million or so that's necessary to do it.
Katrina, I'm afraid we're going to have to cut it short because the line is bad, but we will try to get you back on a better line. That's Katrina Manson, the West Africa correspondent for the Financial Times. Thank you very much for joining us. And while we try to get Katrina Manson back, another song. This is by Swedish singer Robin. This is Call Your Girlfriend. That was Call Your Girlfriend by Robin. It's 18:39 here in London. You're listening to Midori House.
Wake up in Asia or sip a nightcap in Europe to the Monocle Daily, with 2 hours of analysis and reports on current affairs, culture and business. Hear from experts, authors and editors of far-flung newspapers, as well as our own correspondents, every weekday at 2200 hours London time.
Nestled into the urban fabric of London, Hong Kong, New York and Tokyo, Monocle shops are small, cosy outposts of everything we care about. That's incredible design, credible provenance, charming service and, of course, intelligent journalism. Stock up on the latest issue of the magazine, browse our carefully curated selection of books and music, or seek out your favourite back issue to fill that gap in your Monocle archive. So, drop in to one of our shops and our friendly staff will be on hand to show you around. For addresses and opening hours, visit monocle.com.
Welcome back to Midori House here on Monocle 24. It's 18:40 in London. It's 19:40 in Milan, and we're joined now on the line by our correspondent there, Ivan Carvalho, who's been at the MADE Expo, which is the Milano Architettura Design Edilizia. It's a building materials and construction trade fair. Ivan, is that right?
Good evening, Hugo. Yes, it's everything you need to to have to build a house or a skyscraper.
Goodness, and you've come away with the equipment to build a skyscraper, have you?
Well, I've seen a lot of things that are, it's quite interesting there. I saw everything from earth-moving equipment to this French company that sells pool enclosures. I never realized there was such a big market for these structures, freestanding and also retracting things in aluminium and wood for covering your pool. But apparently it's a big business.
Well, I was reading today that the Italian building industry is worth 373 billion euros, which, given how little is being built in Italy at the moment, seems like a lot of money.
Indeed, it's quite a lot. In the last 5 years, it's contracted around about 25%. But thankfully, exports have been a boost for them. So while the construction market in Italy is shrinking, they've had fairly good growth, given the economic climate today, about 3 or 4% in the last few years. And at this fair, you'll see architects and big construction firms from around the world looking at building materials. It's a lot of B2B going on at this trade fair. Mm-hmm. For example, the Saudi Bin Laden Group, who have been building airports in the Gulf and in Asia, and that will be building the 1,000-meter Kingdom Tower in Jeddah, are here to talk to different suppliers, Skidmore, Owings and Merrill, the big U.S. architectural practice, among other U.S. Architectural practices, are here to talk to suppliers to learn what's new in the industry.
Indeed. And like you say, B2B, it's not somewhere that you'd pop down to get some gravel for your own garden, is it?
Exactly, yeah.
But Ivan, I'm interested. You mentioned a lot of foreign and huge global names there. What is the sort of exhibitor ratio to Italian versus international?
It's primarily Italian. There's about 1,500 exhibitors, and just 200 of them are foreign. So it's basically a lot of these niche players in Italy showing off their skills, everything from something like security doors. Well, what we consider doors, for example, in the States, where I used to live, I've always been sort of amazed at how sort of flimsy the doors are. They don't really close properly, and it's easy to kick through. But, in Europe, you have these really solid doors with bolts, and there are a lot of manufacturers that have been able to produce great products that are well insulated, too, so that's also important, insulation, when you're thinking about a home or a building, apartment building. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting the amount of niches that Italian companies can carve out.
And this is the fifth outing. It's a biannual trade fair, I think, isn't it, made?
No, there was actually one last year as well. It's an interesting fair in that there's so much offering. There's even now, because it's not just for the construction, but actually also talking about urban planning and these firms that, for example, offer urban greenery. So for buildings, for example, you may recall when you were in Milan for the Salon del Mobile, we were talking about the Bosco Verticale, these two apartment towers going up in Milan, with the vegetation that is going to be covering a lot of the terraces. And there are these firms that have been able to develop sort of self-pruning, if you can imagine that, vegetation, and systems so that these very large pots, potted plants and trees, some that weigh several tons, are sitting out on terraces, patios, up 26 stories in the sky.
It sounds intriguing. I'm trying not to picture a building filled with scissors, like self-pruning plants on the front of them. But, talking about the value of all these companies that are very specialist in systems and construction materials, something like MADE is presumably far more valuable for the Italian economy as a whole than Salone del Mobile, where increasingly it is just a global fair and a global sort of fairground for furniture companies.
No, exactly. And actually, a little bit like Salon du Mobile, there are some events outside of the fairgrounds. Of course, the big thing this year is, as it has been for the last few years, is sustainability and green. And there were some very interesting exhibits with full, scale, one-to-one scale buildings or homes. Aldo Cibas, the architect, put together a 70-square-meter green home, and to give you an idea of what is the future green home, or at least the proposal for one, he uses wood and hemp, and sort of blocks of hemp for insulation. There are, of course, thermal solar panels. Solar panels can be used for heating the water, cooling systems as well. Internal fittings, so fittings for the bathroom, used recycled materials, rainwater collection, all these things. And the visitors can go through, and there's other exhibits there. There's two or three homes. They can go through and see these model homes and look at them and sort of kick the tires, if you will, mm-hmm. to sort of see how a project could work.
Well, we'll be hearing more about the MADE Expo in Section D, which premieres in 1900 on next Tuesday. Ivan Carvalho, our correspondent in Milan, thank you very much for joining us. It's 1846 here in London. You're listening to Midori House. Welcome back. It's 1847 here in London. It's 1347 in Toronto, and we're celebrating the opening of Monocle's latest outpost, which opened yesterday in Toronto with a Canadian song. This is Carly Rae Jepsen with Call Me Maybe.
I threw a wish in the well. Don't ask me, I'll never tell. I looked to you as it fell, and now you're in my way. I trade my soul for a wish, pennies and dimes for a kiss. I wasn't looking for this, but now you're in my way. Your stare was holding, ripped jeans, skin was showing. Hot night wind was blowing. Where you think you're going, baby? Hey, I just met you.
The wonderful Canadian Carly Rae Jepsen there with Call Me Maybe. You're listening to Midori House with me, Hugo MacDonald. And this week, as I'm sure you must know by now, marks 1 year of Monocle 24. And to celebrate the occasion, we've been asking some of Monocle 24's founding team what moments they've found most memorable. Joining me now in the studio is Monocle's foreign editor, Steve Bloomfield.
Hello.
Hello, Steve.
Founding team. Oh, I like the sound of that.
It makes you sound so much more important than you are, doesn't it?
Thanks.
I did my very first show on Monocle 24 with you. It was The Globalist on day two.
Yes. That was my first show in the big seat as well.
Gosh, I can't believe it's been a year. Can you?
sort of yes and no. Yes and no. It feels like it's been going on forever.
In a good way?
Yeah, in a good way, yes. But also, wow, yeah. No, it's kind of strange, particularly when you go back, when you think back to that first sort of 2 or 3 weeks when we were, just starting.
The wonderful thing... which actually I think you articulated very well in the fantastic video that's on monocle.com charting the whole of the year and what Monocle 24 is about, is the fact that the pace at which we work changed overnight from being a magazine with 10 issues a year and then latterly 2 newspapers. Suddenly it became a newsroom where everything was needed, not by the end of the day or by the end of the week, but
now. Yes,
a person,
now.
A phone number, a contact, an idea, a spin on something.
And so
has been the biggest transformation.
And it really has. And it's, occasionally then it means it's a little bit stressful because it's like, oh my God, the briefing is starting in 45 minutes. What are we going to start with? What's our lead? But on the whole, it's great. And even when it is a little bit stressful, it's good. People are working hard and they're like, right, what are we going to do? We're going to talk about some of my favourite moments.
We want to get them all in there, so
okay.
Should we go straight to
them? Yeah. So what I want to say is we've done some shows, not just here in Midori House, but also on the road. And the first one we did was in Washington back in November. And this was a show that I did, I think, with Andrew Tuck. And one of our guests that day was a wonderful Hisham Mellem. And this is that.
When I look at Egypt, Tunisia and Libya and now Yemen, sometimes I wonder that what we have seen so far may be the decapitation of the regime in each country. That is, the head of the regime is gone. If you take Egypt, for instance, and since we're talking about Egypt, let's talk about the analogy of the pyramid. If you want to use that analogy, you'd see that the head of the pyramid, the tip of the pyramid, Mubarak and his sons and his cronies are out. But the pyramid itself is still there. By that, I mean the security structure, the economic structure, the political culture, and even the cultural structure that allowed Mubarak to rule Egypt for 30 years and the 4 generals to rule Egypt since 1952. And now we have a bunch of generals running Egypt today. That structure that allowed these generals to rule Egypt is still basically intact. how you chip away at this structure, how you undermine the structure, will be the essence of revolution. If this does not happen, then you really do not have a revolution. You have a decapitation of a regime. But when I look around at Egypt in particular, or Yemen, or Libya, I see monumental challenges before we can talk about a really Arab Spring or a real empowerment for the people there.
That was the brilliant Hisham Mellem, who is the Washington Bureau Chief of Al Arabiya. And that was the first show that we did outside Midori House. That was in Washington back in November. And then, Hugo, as you well know, this summer we did a huge number of shows during the Olympics. And this was one of my favourite highlights. This was all the shows we did during the Olympics for Midori House on the road.
Habari, Yebo, hello and welcome to a special edition of Midori House with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Sophie Grove.
To continue our special celebration of the Olympics, tonight we're live at Africa Village.
Broadcasting live from Canada House at Trafalgar Square.
Oh, Canada, our home and native land, true patriot love in all our sons command.
This is Midori House, live from Jamaica House here on Monocle 20.
Broadcasting live from the summer house at the Danish Olympic Pavilion, Imagination Denmark, down at St. Catherine's Dock in the shadow of London's Tower Bridge.
Bare en dragt så let og glat i solfaldets strålevæld. Nu vågner den klare morgen.
And we are here live at Club France at Old Billingsgate Market, right on the River Thames. And we've been joined by two Olympians.
We're at Austria's Olympic sort of second home from home, sort of second ambassadorial residence. It's a Tiroler hut in spitting distance of Tower Hill. We've had yodeling, we've had a synchronized swimmer, we've had all sorts of people on, we've had sports journalists, we've even had the ambassador, we've had a one-man band. There's only one week we can almost finish this show. It's with the chef, Alexander Funkhauser.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us on Midori House.
Thank you. Nice to be here. And then here comes schnapps. I let you dry, yeah? This.
Thank you.
We at home, normally we drink the schnapps one in the morning before eating.
Really?
So you never be sick.
That's
really.
That's a nice way to start the day.
And if you get sick, you don't know it because you are drunk.
You know? It's like being around Andrew's house for breakfast. No, Andrew.
I do this every day.
Oh, yeah, man, that's the style.
Man alive.
Yodeling 2012.
All hype for the band out of Pina.
Attention, here comes Schnapp. The best thing that's ever been said on radio.
It really is.
And finally, you've got another clip which we need to hear.
Yes, this is one of the great things about radio has been, I think, the double acts between the presenters, and none are better than the wonderful Emma Nelson and Andrew Muller.
I think in terms of Russian battle reenactment, sort of like recreating the Eastern Front of World War One, World War Two, probably really sorts the men from the boys.
And when you get this issue of how historical reports are always different, because that is why history is history. What happens if someone who's fighting someone else suddenly says, actually, no, it happened this way, and then they start arguing?
If you have revisionists.
Yes.
Ironically, they might get into an actual fight.
A real one.
That would be brilliant. I wonder if anyone's ever actually been killed at a battle reenactment in an argument over what happened at the first battle. That must have happened at least once.
God, I hope so.
I'm going to look that up. That would be the best thing ever.
What a ridiculous way of spending the day.
That was Emma Nelson, stalwart of the Monocle 24 team, and Andrew Muller there being funny.
They were, yes. And those were my highlights. I think, you know, hopefully we'll have many more OBs. In fact, I'm off to New York soon to do some outside broadcasts from there.
Brilliant. You're just trying to clock them up for year two, aren't you?
I really am. Yeah. I really am. And there'll be a lot more Emma and Andrew as well.
Brilliant. Well, Steve Bloomfield, Monocle's foreign editor, thank you very much for coming on and sharing your highlights of the first year of Monocle 24. Many, many more years to come, we hope. That's all we have time for today on Midori House. Thank you very much to our producer, Hannah Jenkins, our researcher, A.K. Perkopp, Papillion, and our studio manager, Sam Impey. Up next, after the news, is this week's episode of The Menu, the food and drinks programme here on Monocle 24. And in 3 hours' time, at 2200 hours here in London, Andrew Muller and Emma Nelson will be back for more laughter on The Monocle Daily. Marcus Hippie will be back with Midori House at the same time on Monday. But from me, Hugo McDonald, thank you very much for listening and have a great weekend. Goodbye.